You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This next piece discusses intimate partner homicide and domestic violence. If you feel uncomfortable about this topic, please feel free to tune back in a few minutes. New research has emerged showing that a third of all male perpetrators of intimate partner homicide in Australia are actually middle class and have had no previous contact with the criminal justice system. This raises questions about stereotypes of what violent offenders look like. I spoke to Dr. Alice Mills from the University of Auckland's Criminology Department about the study and the wider social context surrounding domestic violence. So the study looked at 200 cases in Australia where men killed their intimate partners over a period of about 11 years. One third of these men are considered middle class and high functional in other areas of their life. So how does this challenge stereotypes of what intimate partner violence looks like?
Yeah, I think one of the main things that this challenge is that for the most part, these men won't have had any contact with the previous contact with the criminal justice system, and they won't be seen to be kind of at risk of violence, of being violent towards their partners. Often the stereotype that we have is actually one of the other kind of categories that the study produced, which is basically this notion of family violence, domestic violence being persistent, disorderly, and basically perpetrated by people who have complex histories of trauma, violence, and frequent contact with the criminal justice system. And this is often also related to things like physical health issues, mental health issues, and also addictions as well. So I think one of the ways in which it's really challenging the stereotypes is the idea that it's that women are at risk of intimate partner homicide through men who don't generally come to the attention of the criminal justice system.
What does this mean for future research into domestic violence and trying to understand what drives it?
I think that kind of depends on whether or not we're actually talking about domestic violence or we're talking about intimate partner homicide. One of the things, there's actually been quite a lot of research in this area, and to a certain degree, what the information that was released yesterday was already known. I guess the proportion of it wasn't really known. But one of the main things is that we know that women that are at risk of intimate partner homicide, there's often but not always, a pattern of domestic violence before that. One of the main things, though, is that this kind of group that the study has identified has particularly said that women are at risk after they're separated. And we know already from research done in the US and in the UK that women are at much greater risk of being killed by their male partner, either at the point of leaving or after leaving. So one of the main issues that this kind of comes into play here, sorry, I'm going slightly off the track of your question, is that often people sort of say, oh, why didn't they leave? But actually the point is actually that's when they're at risk of being seriously harmed or killed. So that's one thing to bear in mind. In terms of the research agenda, as I say, I think this has actually already been studied to quite a substantial degree, and it's certainly been that kind of research has been the kind of main driver behind some of the risk assessment tools that the police and other agencies do use to try and ascertain whether or not somebody is at risk of being killed by a current or former partner. I think I would hope that this is more about actually kind of driving not just research but driving policy, and this all very much relates to the issue of coercive control, which is becoming a lot better known, I think it's fair to say, in terms of assessing the risk of domestic violence.
Would you expect a similar pattern in New Zealand?
Yeah, I would expect similar. There may be different proportions, but I do think there's still patterns there are similar patterns certainly in New Zealand. I think one of the things that we need to be aware of, as we do kind of in so many different kind of aspects of crime, criminology, criminal justice, is that often what we think of as perpetrators are those that come to the attention of the criminal justice system. And that invariably tends to be who do the police focus on, who comes to the attention of the police, and that does tend to be those who are more likely to come from deprived areas, for example, more likely to be Māori. And as a consequence of that, that is kind of skewing what we know about domestic violence at this stage. But there has been this awareness within the kind of family violence research community that, of course, not all domestic violence is perpetrated by those who tend to come to the attention of the authorities.
Does kind of offending that is driven by threats to masculinity explain the disparity in male and female offending?
it's certainly been one of the theories that have been put out there. I mean, I think, as I say, these studies in the UK and the US that very much kind of were designed to create risk assessment tools in terms of whether or not somebody was at risk of intimate partner homicide, being victim of intimate partner homicide, certainly basically came out of the notion that that intimate partner homicide, not so much domestic violence, but intimate partner homicide, is often caused by male proprietariness, the idea that some men believe that they should have power and control over women, that their female partner is some kind of possession. And that if there is any notion of that kind of possession, that control that they have over their partner being challenged, then that's when it tends to be a kind of trigger or a very risky point. And that partly explains the reason why women are more likely to be killed at the point of separation, either just before or after separation.
And you mentioned policy and kind of using this information to inform it. What are you hoping to see in terms of policy?
That is kind of quite a bit harder, I think it's fair to say. I think one of the, because it largely depends on whether or not a jurisdiction has criminalised coercive control, and there are reasons for and against doing that. And certainly some people, I know that in Australia, for example, some jurisdictions have criminalised coercive control and others have not. The issue with criminalising anything, though, is that it's still got to be reported. You can have something as a crime on the statute books, as it were, but it's still got to be actually reported as a crime. It's got to be recognised as a crime. So one of the main things that really needs to happen is for the agencies or the people that people are at risk of domestic violence, intimate partner homicide, actually come into contact with. So that will mean their families, that will mean their friends, that will also mean people such as health services as well, GPs. Are they aware, are they picking up on these signs and therefore putting things into place?
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.